The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 4, where we discuss education, how to be better people, what's happening around the world. And as you can hear, we are going through a very, very rough time. And, you know, we always start this show about the beauty of the show, where we discuss how to make ourselves better people, how to make the community a better place to be, how to make the world a better place, how to influence ourselves and each other's and our families and our communities. We'll always start with how was your Yom Tov? How was your past week? How'd you manage? And just have a chat about growth and achievement and getting places in the world. But not today. Today, I feel like my challenge is to get through this hour without crying. Get through this hour without breaking down. Get through this hour realizing that we can talk about what is happening, realizing that our family is under attack like we can't imagine. We don't understand the horror. We don't even realize, are we able to think about the 800 plus casualties, or can we just have our hearts with the kidnapped victims? Or are we able to think even about the thousands of injured? It's just beyond, way beyond what we can comprehend and imagine. And obviously, this is what the show is going to be about. We are not on our regular edition of discussion of education, of growth. It's really about this level of survival. Anything you want to comment, add, chat, anything that's on your heart, please send us an SMS. 34519 is the SMS line. Telegram 061-895-1019. Or you could even call at 010-140-3020. I was realizing before the show, if we just take the death toll in Israel, and let's say I would dedicate, I don't know, 60 seconds per person to describe who that person was. I think 60 seconds is quite a fair amount for a person's life to describe them. It would take me nearly 14 hours if I don't breathe or anything just to go through the people's names. It's insane, it's unrealistic, and it's real suffering. Saying that, there's another thing that's happening very unique in this attack, in this war, in this situation that Israel is under, is that we are seeing the civilians having to deal with a lot. Areas that the army can't go into yet. Areas that certain services are not coming, like ambulances took time. And over everything, there's trauma everywhere. Everybody knows someone. Everybody has someone. We have people in our community that have their loved ones in Israel under attack. We have people in the community that have their families in the IDF. We have people in the communities that are worried, that are stressed. And it's coming down to us as a community to support each other. And the reason I'm saying all of that is, out of so many people that I could choose to speak to today in this horrific times, there's one person I think we have to hear and we have to listen and learn carefully what is our role and what we need to do. And that is, his name is Avi Tenenbaum. He has an MA. He's an expert in psychological first aid. And when I say psychological first aid, we're talking about a person who has actually come out to South Africa to train Hatzalah here and how to manage first aid of medical, whenever there's chaos or disaster, to be the first responders. In Israel, he has in his unit thousands of volunteers. I know he's been all over the world teaching and explaining. And I think it's down to us, for us, to learn how to do the first aid for everyone. I'd always almost say, like, Avi, you need to teach us about psychological first aid for dummies, because we're all going to be affected. We're all going to know somebody who's suffering. We're all going to be there with someone who suddenly heard about a family, who suddenly heard about a member, who suddenly went through trauma, who suddenly realized that their loved one in the IDF is under the stress or whatever it is. So without even continuing, good afternoon, Avi. I don't know if we can even say good afternoon, but thank you, Avi, for being with us. It's a real privilege. I know that you're not breathing since Saturday, and you're running around and changing the world, and you had to move quite a few things to be with us on the show today. And I appreciate that, because we are with Israel standing at these times, and it's really, really hectic. So before we start, give us a bit of understanding of what's happening with your units, your teams, you know, kind of where the psychological first aid is taking place from your point of view currently in Israel and around the world.
Sure. So first of all, thank you for having me. And your community is one of the most loveliest communities I've ever seen, regards to everyone. And I know that you're very pro-Israel. And when you say you stand with Israel, I feel in my heart that that's true, because I've seen it in action in your neighborhoods. You're just such a special group, and thank you. Thanks. So I can't comment about the United Hatzalah Psychotrauma Unit. I'm not familiar with their operations in particular since 2019, but I do still work with the Ministry of Health, and I'm working with people down south in the Resiliency Center in Sderot and in other places. I also have my own organization. And right now, all over the country, like you said, there is a tremendous amount of violence, fear, terror, unknown. Dynamics are constantly changing. About half an hour ago, we had 12 rockets shot at us from Syria. So there's all sorts of things happening at once. We're having more success in the south at this time, but I don't need to get into what happens there. It's incomprehensible. It's too surreal to grasp. We have the rockets. We just had rockets shot in my area 3 hours ago. There are people that are afraid to go outside. It's really horrific. And I would say that in some ways, Israel hasn't seen an event like this since the Yom Kippur War. So there's a lot of citizens stepping up to the plate to help in their ways. And they're trying to bring food, water, and equipment to different areas. They're trying to drive soldiers to their miluim, because people are getting called up, including the bus drivers. So there's nobody to drive people to the south and to the north. So everybody is doing their part. The men and women in miluim are doing their part. Armed citizens are banding together with the police to create units. I'm part of a volunteer anti-terror unit that if people would pogrom and come towards Jerusalem, we would intervene and stop them along the way. So we're all trying to get together. We were caught by surprise. It's horrific, but we have no time to stop. We have to get moving. We don't know if this is going to be much worse than it is now, or please God, it will be incredible and be over soon, but it looks like it's going to take a few weeks. That's what the experts predict.
What is our role as South Africans, as people from distance that want to be part and want to help and want to share and just want to be here for you guys?
You know, Rabbi, that's a lovely question. I'm a big believer in just reaching out, even before any sophistication, sending a WhatsApp, calling somebody, saying, hey, I'm thinking about you. What's your name for prayer? I'm going to pray that you're safe. Or is there any place I can donate to that you would like me to donate that would help you? Or asking, is there any way I can help you? And seeing what they say. Some people need help. Some people don't need help. But we won't know till we ask. And even if they don't need your help, the gesture is lovely. It's touching. And it shows that people are behind you. You're not by yourself. When we're in trauma, we feel that we stand alone. And when people all around the world say, hey, I'm there for you. If you need anything, just holler. It's a good feeling. I can tell you that I'm putting together this anti-terror unit. And, you know, we're scared of what might come. We don't exactly know what will happen. But those little WhatsApp messages really are mechazik us. They give us strength. I had friends in the police that yesterday stopped to fill up gas, and somebody handed them a carton of cigarettes and a pizza pie. So I'm not condoning smoking or not, but it was so touching to those police. They felt so good. You know, you're putting yourself out there. You're putting yourself in danger, and somebody gave you a pizza pie and gives you the strength to push yourself. It reminds you why you're taking this risk. You're taking this risk to protect these beautiful people.
We need to dive into that a bit more, and I would definitely separate the two groups that we need to address. A is the people in Israel and our people we worry about and know, and B is the people in South Africa that have loved ones in Israel that they're panicking about and how we can support them. We'll look at that shortly. We do need to take a short ad break, and when we come back, we will go into that and dive into that discussion much more. And in the meantime, just a reminder, if you have any specific questions, Avi is the expert. If you have anything you want to ask, want to comment, want to share, or worried, how do I address, how do I deal with this whole situation? 34519 is the SMS line. Telegram 061-895-1019, or you can even call 010-140-3020. We're here. We're here for the next hour. Any questions, any comments, what we can do, just message.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back in the middle of a fascinating discussion. I'm here with Avi Tenenbaum, who is an expert in psychological first aid, and we are discussing the first steps of how to help our loved ones, our friends, our neighbors, even somebody you just bumped into and you don't even know them. How do you help them during these horrific, horrific times and situations? And right before the break, Avi spoke about the first thing is check in. Message them. Hey, how are you? Thinking of you. I care about you. We're praying for you. Love you. We're standing with you, just to take away that loneliness feeling. Any questions you have, anything you want to comment, add, or communicate with a specific or just general your thoughts, 34519 is the SMS line, 061-895-1019 is the Telegram line. Just let's see how we can talk, help, and learn from each other. Avi, let's speak about South Africans. There's a large amount of people in the community that are worried sick about their family, siblings, parents, children, about their, some of them are in the IDF, some of them are just living in the South, some of them are, as we heard now, living in the North or Jerusalem or whatever, wherever it is, really, really disturbed. And we want, and sometimes we kind of want to reach out to them and worry about them. At the same time, we don't want to be nosy, and we don't want to push stress, and we don't want to get involved. Where does a line cross within our friends in the community? Kind of saying, I know you have a loved one. I'm thinking of you. How do we approach our local community to support each other?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I'm trying to unpack the question. Part of what I heard you talk about is, we want to make sure we're not intrusive and we're not overbearing and annoying to people, right? Is that what we're
completely,
talking about, Rabbi?
Completely. And you want to find that boundary of being there but not pushing beyond. And there's various relationships we have. Some of them, it's probably not as complicated when it's your best friend, and it's not. But what happens when it's somebody you see twice a year in shul, somebody that you bump into in the shops and you're friendly, but you don't have that regular connection, somebody that you have somewhere in between, maybe a bit of a more relationship, but you don't generally message them? How do we cover that gap? How do we bridge that difference?
Fair question. So I think the first step is we don't want to assume anything about anybody. A lot of times people assume that everybody with some sort of connection to something must be very traumatized. They must be in a lot of stigma. They must not want to talk about it. We have to force them to talk about it. It's not necessarily the case. It's not necessarily the case because sometimes people just are naturally very resilient, or they already are receiving help from somebody else. Maybe the only help that they need, if any, is the fact that you offered. And so I think the next word is attunement. I think we want to be attuned. We want to offer as little as possible, being attuned to what happens next. We can make an offer and then see what happens. So I can check in with you. I can say, hey, I'm thinking about you. And if there's anything that you need from me, just let me know. And then you can say, thank you. Or maybe you can say, I actually need money. I'm not working. Or you can say, I'm so scared. Can you check in with me twice a day? I don't know what you'll say, but I made an offer in such a way that I leave it up to you to decide what you want to do with it next, as opposed to me foisting that on top of you, coercing you, and assuming.
So let's be very practical here. And I'm going to create two scenarios. Let's say I messaged someone and I said, hey, I'm thinking of you. I'm here for you. Do you need anything? And they message back, I don't know what I need. Cry for help. Or they message back, yes, I want to talk. And then one would say like, oh, then what do I say now? What do I do? What would be the next step?
Well, okay. So if they say, I don't know what I need, then I can say, I'm so glad that you said that. If you think of anything in the future, just let me know. And if you want to be in touch, just pick up the phone. Right? You could just say something like that. And again, you're handing the ball to them and they'll take it and run with it or not. Now, I'm not talking about a case where somebody is absolutely suffering. They're completely dysfunctional. It's obvious beyond any shadow of doubt. And somebody must step in from the outside and intervene, because if we don't, they're just going to fall into the abyss. I don't think that usually happens. I don't think that happens with most people. I think that's rare. Generally speaking, like we said, let's pass the ball to them and they'll play with it or they'll say no, thank you. Now, what if they say, sure, I actually really need to talk? So all we need to do is listen and let them talk, and we listen. We don't need to have particular advice. We don't need to be experts. There is a place for experts, but the idea of listening to somebody is something anybody can do. There's actually a beautiful YouTube channel. I discovered it recently. I think it's called Listening Tables or something like this. It's a guy that he just opens up a table. Anybody can sit down next to him and just talk about anything, and he just sits and listens. And it shows you that you don't need to be King Solomon to know all the answers. You need to show that you care. And you show that you care by empathically closing your mouth, opening your ears, and giving some time. And offering if they want to do it again. If they ask something very, very specific, and they actually want very specific advice, so then to the best of your ability, you can give advice if you know about that topic. Or you can refer them to somebody that does know about it. Or sometimes you can spin it back to them. For example, if they say, I'm so anxious, I just don't know how to fall asleep, I'm so worried about my son, then you can say, do you consider meeting a professional about it? Or you can say, do you want to think with me together? We'll brainstorm three or four ideas that you can do to help. I heard a talk about this on Chai FM. This expert guy was talking about how we can come up with our own ideas of coping. Let's think of two or three ideas together. Let's jot them down on a paper. Maybe it's taking a walk outside. Maybe it's petting the dog. It's listening to music. It's saying some Tehillim, whatever it is. And that person might find their own ways of coping as well. So there's actually a lot of things that any person can do to support somebody else. And it's not exclusive only to psychiatrists, psychologists. Anybody can listen to someone else.
Amazing. Let's move on to another topic. I do feel like we maybe need to go in a bit more here, but let's just move on a bit. How do we talk to younger kids about what's going on? And let me elaborate a bit. There's, on the one hand, we want to shelter them and protect them. On the other hand, we don't want them to go to school or go outside and hear what we don't want them to hear. We can't shelter them completely, so we want them to have some information that we don't want them to be caught off guard, but we also don't want to bombard them. And there's horrific things happening and going on. How do we address it?
That's such a big, common question being asked right now. You know, first of all, I want to say, if anybody goes to my website, psychotraumaunit.com, psychotraumaunit.com, on that website, there's a page called Free Downloads, and I have 15 infographics in English and in Hebrew. They're super easy to read. You can share them, and it talks about this question, how to speak to children, and many other questions that I'm sure we're going to address till we finish today's interview.
Avi, so I'm going to ask you after the show to send me some links, and we'll post them on our social media. So anybody in the community, sure, who needs to get that information can download that and find that information to that. But generally, what would be the way to approach with kids? And I'll maybe even ask you to elaborate and separate between our kids generally and kids specifically here that have kids, that have older brothers and sisters in the IDF, or have uncles and aunts in the IDF, who have family or whatever it is.
You know, Rabbi, you said it so well. You really hit the nail on the head before. You know, the problem is that our kids are going to hear things anyways. A lot of kids have smartphones. There's television. There are rumors. It's amazing to see the amount of rumors that these kids make up, and it's like playing telephone, and by the time it gets to the third or fourth kid, the kids are panicking because they created some completely bogus story about, you know, how everyone's being slaughtered and beheaded and all our families are going to die. And they're misunderstanding or taking out of context something that the third person told to the fourth person to the fifth person. I think because our kids are exposed to information, we want to give them some information. It has to be age appropriate. It has to be developmentally appropriate. We want to pick what we want to share with our kids, how we want to word it. What's the goal of why we're sharing it? The goal is we want to make them feel safe and make them feel they can turn to us for accurate information. And by us providing that information, we're able to control the narrative. We're able to form the type of narrative that the educators and the community feel is the right narrative and that you as a parent knows that your child needs. Some children need narrative to be one way. Some children need it to be another way. I know in my own family, there are some kids amongst my kids that they're just really, really scared. They want to hear as little information as possible. But just knowing what's going on makes them calm because there's unknown what's going on. I need to obsessively know what's going on. It gives me an illusory sense of control, an illusionary sense of control, right? And so I say, I'll tell you what's going on. Anytime I have information, I'll let you know. And they feel safe and they feel calm. I have other kids in my family that they want to hear every time Tzahal slaughters all of the terrorists and stacks their bodies and blows up the buildings. And this is how he gets through it and is resilient. His morale is high and he's able to tell his friends, you heard what just happened. It's the most amazing thing. It's incredible. So everyone needs to hear something different. I think the parents know their child best. We don't ever want to lie about something that the children are going to hear about anyways. That's a big mistake because then your kids are not going to trust you and they're just going to get information from sources that we don't want. I think it's good to tell kids that news glorifies information sometimes or it's out of context. You don't really know what you're seeing. You don't know what it means. So we can provide context for our children. This event that you saw, this is what happens. This is where it happens. This is what it means for your uncle. This is what it means for our family and so on. So definitely there's room to step in, give some information and use your judgment.
Okay, amazing. So a few more topics I still want to get to. However, one of the listeners sent in a question like this. Hi, Rabbi. Thank you so much for, we really need this. What can I do if I did offer help and was told no, but I know it's needed? I feel so confused.
That's a good question, and that certainly can happen. Look, we can't force people with a club to receive help. That doesn't work well. But what we can do is I think we can think of the help that they need. We can get the phone number ready. And we can wait until that person is ready to hear it. And that might take some time, or we might want to enlist the rabbi or a best friend or somebody else to also do some outreach. And maybe they have a different, less threatening relationship than we do. Maybe it's very hard for that person that we're approaching them for their pride and for their ego. But maybe with somebody else at their work or their rabbi, you know, maybe the rabbi can say, hey, I noticed that you haven't been showing up to shul recently, or I noticed that you haven't had the smile that you usually have. Is everything okay? You know, and so there's different ways of doing this, but I'm not a believer in forcing people, and it's a challenge. Sometimes we wait until a person is ready to come to us, but we want to make sure that we're ready right away to give them that number, give them that resource when they ask.
Okay. A very interesting thing I had, you know, in the past, since Yom Tov ended over here, I've been consistently, this is probably my first break, from debriefing and speaking to people and working with people about different traumas and just for this show. And I saw a very interesting difference between people that were in Israel that I was debriefing that from Saturday night, or some people even before, were obsessively checking the news and checking and calming their nervous system down by being updated. And people that were in Yom Tov and Shul and had no access and actually went through this horrific 24 hours of, and more, sometimes 30 hours of not knowing and just worrying and processing. And there was benefit to the people that were able to seek information that I found that it calmed them down. And I saw the great usage of gathering that information in a safe way. On the other hand, I also had to do a trauma debrief to someone who actually collapsed when they were exposed to an horrific, horrific picture that was posted on somebody else's status, and they snapped and they called me, and it was a whole issue. Where do we keep our balance of getting the information, calming our nervous system, knowing what's happening, but at the same time not destroying ourselves? Because some of the images out there and the videos out there are really, really horrific. Where do we find that space?
You know, I think on the most simplest level, trauma is about feeling that we're threatened. We don't know if we can survive. We feel that there is a threat beyond our means to address, or there's a threat to somebody else's life that we know, or to our nation, right? Because we identify as Jews and with the state of Israel and the people of Israel. Trauma is when we feel overwhelmed and we don't have the resources to meet the challenge at hand. And when we don't know what's going on, we're really, really extra worried. And when we know what's going on, it calms our nerves insofar as knowing basic information. Here's what's happening. Now that I know what's happening, I can predict what I want to do next. I can predict to bring my child home or check in with them more often. Or I can go to sleep calmly knowing that things are settling down. I know what to do. So there's that level of information, which I think is bona fide and it's important, and it's even pikuach nefesh. Rav Shmuel Eliyahu in Tzfat, here in Israel, on Shabbos, told all the news stations, make sure to run the news on Shabbos, even if you're Shomer Shabbos, during a war. We have to know what's happening to some degree. Now, there's the second level that you referred to, second level of information, of gore, of shocking content. Now, there's a lot to say about that, and there's a lot of reasons and motivations why people look at that. I think there's a morbid curiosity that people have. I think that these are unbelievable things. I think it's unbelievable for us to process the brevity of what's happening, and sometimes we are urged to look at those pictures in order to try to control and grasp and admit that this is what's happening. You know, it's kind of like, what can it really be? Men, women, and children, and the elderly were taken into captivity and murdered. Some of them were murdered and raped. Let me look at the picture and then tell myself it's true, right? It's something like that sort of thought process. It's surreal. It's unbelievable. So there's a lot of reasons why people look at the gore. Most of the reasons are not good reasons. I could tell you that as a first responder and working with soldiers, sometimes for soldiers and with police, it's important to look at those because that motivates us to fight back. Because we're standing in the line of fire and we want to look at what they did to our people so that we don't feel bad at all doing it right back to them if we're supposed to. So there's a lot of reasons to this, but I would encourage people that don't have a reason to look at gory things. It's not good for us. It causes intrusive thoughts or it desensitizes us to difficult things. It's just not worth it, generally speaking.
Oh, that's fascinating. There's so much more we need to cover, but we're not going to have time, unfortunately. Avi, if you could just repeat again where people could find the more information on your websites, on the ability to have access. And the knowledge is really out there. We just need to know how to go and find it and anything that we can help. And then obviously we will please upload this conversation to the website and to the app and just get that information. So anybody wants to hear the podcast, if you're just joining now, I highly recommend. And yeah, just if you could share with that with us again, and we'll continue from there.
Sure. So Rabbi, I'll make sure to send you the link. It's psychotraumaunit.com, psychotraumaunit.com. And on that page, you can go to the free downloads. And on the free downloads page, there are 15 infographics in English and in Hebrew all about how to speak to our children, how to build resilience with our families, how to calm ourselves down, how to deal with intrusive thoughts or scary things that we saw that we can't get them out of our mind. We can't fall asleep. It's in Hebrew and English. You can share them. And I also have a YouTube channel, and I hope to start uploading a lot more content on there about this particular conflict that will be helpful.
Okay. Avian, just one more last thing. One of the messages I didn't manage to read from a listener, and we don't have time because we have to continue, is a very important message, the question. I'm wondering if you can send me the answer afterwards. The question was like this. How do I tell my child that there is someone in the family, one of our family members that has been injured? I don't want him to fear from any, I don't want him to hear from anyone else. That was a question. We're not going to manage to answer that on the show, but please, if you could reply to that, and I will send that to the listener, and also any other of the questions. I'm going to see if there's anything major I will send you, and we'll continue from there. Avi Tenenbaum, thank you so much for making the time in these busy, busy, horrific times. And please God, we should speak when things are better and calmer and in a better place. And just thank you for everything you're doing around the world.
Amen. Thank you for supporting us and standing with us at this time as well. Thank you so much. We should hear good news.
Amen. Thank you so much.